am Professor Eitan Gilboa. I am the director of the School of Communication and of the Center for International Communication at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. I am a political scientist and an expert on international communication, working on Israeli politics, American politics and foreign policy, and American-Israeli relations. Conflicts are always resolved one way or the other. In international relations theory, we have a good way to assess the chances of a conflict to be resolved. This method is called ripeness. Ripeness means that the two sides to a conflict, or even if there are more than two sides, have to conclude that the only way to resolve the conflict is by peaceful means and not by violence. They also have to acknowledge and to recognize that in order to reach an agreement, both sides have to reach a compromise. You can't get all that you want. If you insist on getting all that you want, there would be no resolution and no agreement. Also, it's very important to have third parties sometimes helping sides who find it very difficult to conduct negotiations. But third parties cannot dictate the results of the negotiations. They can help to start negotiations, but then they should leave the area for direct negotiations between the sides. In the Israeli-Palestinian case, there are too many problems related to the nature of the conflict. It is not just territory. We know now it's much more than that. It's a certain interpretation of religion. It is culture, it is politics, and it's history. And if you ignore those and think, oh, it's just Israeli withdrawal, and then you have a Palestinian state, and then you have peace, seems that this is not working. We have a good example of peace between Israel and Egypt that has lasted since 1979. It's not the best agreement. I would have expected to have more people-to-people contacts and to have more tourism and trade and openness, but obviously this kind of agreement is much better than conflict and violence. So I assume that even if we have tomorrow an agreement with the Palestinians, then it would look like the Israeli-Egyptian peace and not necessarily like the kind of peace agreements we have in Europe between, say, the Germans and the French achieved after World War II. We have a lot of respect for any religion, including Islam. The problem is not Islam. The problem is with political interpretations and manipulations of Islam for purposes that have nothing to do with Islam or religion. When political Islam is using violence, obviously, this is not something that you find recommendations for in the Holy Scriptures. I think that there is a lot of potential for good relations between Islamic countries and Israel and the Jewish state. People think that Islam means Arabism. But there are more Muslims who are not Arabs than the other way around. The biggest, I think, Muslim country is Indonesia. And Turkey is a big Muslim, but not an Arab country. So I think that in the West we see too many generalizations about Islam. And I think the tragedy is that people refer to Islam as political Islam, and to those movements, radical movements, which are abusing religion for political purposes. I think that Turkish-Israeli relations has been very important for achieving stability and progress for both countries. I've always advocated very strong relationship between two powers in the Middle East that, if joined together, could have significant influence on Middle Eastern and even world affairs. Israel is very strong militarily, economically. It is one of the most successful high-tech countries in the world. It's a startup nation, a small population, but big achievements. And if we look now at the Middle East, in view of what is called Arab Spring, mistakenly, because it's moving into a very different authoritarian period in Middle Eastern history. But if you look around the last 2 years, what we see is civil wars, tremendous violence in places such as Syria, like, 70,000 people killed. We look at Libya, where there's ongoing civil war. We look at Egypt with minimum personal security, much violence, demonstrations on daily basis. And so the Arab states, where revolutions have occurred, it's completely chaos. And the economic situation is a big disaster. If you look at Israel, economy has not been that much affected by the global recession. The same is true for Turkey. I have to tell you that if I look at the level of trade between Turkey and Israel, it has not been affected by the political tensions. I think trade is in very good condition. And I think this is very important. We also, you know, we know that some people in Turkey, at the public opinion level, especially the more fundamentalists, don't like a good strategic, economic, and diplomatic relationship between Turkey and Israel. But we think that, and I meet people from Turkey, intellectuals, elite, journalists, and also ordinary people who have liked very much the relationship and wants it to be restored. Turkey is a stable country, both economically, politically, financially. Israel is the same thing. So if you connect the two, you will get significant joint level of influence that could help to stabilize the entire area. We know the Turkish played some role in the past in promoting Israeli-Syrian negotiations. It has not produced real negotiations, but the potential is right there. In order for Turkey to be a mediator, it has first to repair relations with Israel and to achieve a level of trust with Israeli leaders that would permit Turkey to be a mediator. I have thought in the past that Turkey could be a very good mediator because of its presence in the region, its understanding of the region, its good relations with all kinds of groups. But the potential is there. Conditions have to be created in order to make that potential realistic. The basic interests are there. Both Israel and Turkey share the same interests, both strategic, economic, political, as well as spiritual. And I think that the spiritual factor is always important because it provides like an umbrella, a larger context where all the other components of relationship and cooperation may come into effect. Syria obviously represents a major challenge to both Israel and Turkey. Israel has a border with Syria. Turkey has a border with Syria. Lebanon has a border with Syria. Syria has also a border with Iraq. Yeah. And Iraq is Iran. So everything, Syria is a key country. And I think that there should have been much more strategic cooperation between the two countries on Syria. Because if the Syrian civil war is not going to settle soon, and if not, a stable government would be established there, which I hope would not be made just of radical Islamic groups. There are many radical fundamentalist, Islamic, violent and hostile groups fighting the government of Bashar Assad. I hope they would not be the major components of a new Syrian government, if there is to be a new Syrian government. So here, obviously, the joint interest is to make sure that a new government in Syria would be stable, but also friendly and not violent and not threatening neighbors and not becoming a source of new waves of terrorism against its own neighbors. I think that this is a significant missing component in the discourse that we have about Islam. Unfortunately, what you have just said, many movements and organizations, terrorist organizations, don't accept and don't recognize. In fact, organizations such as Hamas and Hezbollah are abusing the term jihad, because jihad is the opposite of violence, or at least there are certain interpretations of jihad. They are the opposite of violence, but they want to conduct a holy war. A holy war means that you have to kill all the infidels. And if you look at the charter of Hamas, they don't recognize any rights of anybody else, and they use terrorism and violence. The same is true for Hezbollah. And my problem is that somehow these organizations, which should have been at the margins of society, have become dominant. And they call the shots. They dictate foreign policy and national security behavior. If you look at a place like Gaza, where you really see a ruthless, cruel, violent regime that not only hates Israel, are anti-Semitic, and use terror and violence against Israel, they also terrorize their own people. There's no measure of any democracy in Gaza. People are afraid to speak. All the communication, all the media are tightly controlled. If you disagree, you could be killed or you could be wounded. This is one of the problems in Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, because I'm asking myself, if Hamas and Fatah cannot agree between themselves and cannot negotiate anything between themselves, how they could negotiate with Israel? I'm always looking at them and I say, I want to see how they reach a compromise, how they can settle differences. And it seems that this has not been yet achieved. Once it is achieved, then I think we could have a better chance to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We see that in many places where radical Islam got together with socialism, we call it the Red-Green Alliance. It has produced only instability, violence. We see this also in Europe. We see how the radical left has joined forces with Islamists, with radical Islamists, fundamentalist Islamists, and I think this is a bad message, not only to the Middle East but also to Europe. I've never understood how these two movements, the left, even the radical left, and radical Islam got together. Because radical left, for example, has some other ideas about political systems, about human rights, about citizen rights, and political Islam does not respect any of those rights. But I think this is exactly what we are facing. And therefore, I believe that education, media, the media today are very significant factor in education of the masses, of the people. I completely have reservations about the role Al Jazeera is playing in the Middle East, Al Jazeera English and Al Jazeera Arabic. They have too much in the last 10 years took the side of radical Islam, of those who abuse Islam for political reasons. But Al Jazeera has been very popular, and I think that they have been somewhat successful in brainwashing the ordinary citizens in many Muslim and Arab countries to adopt the direction of the negative political Islam. This has to be changed by television, the social media networks, which have become very important. We talk about blogs and exchanges between people to people, creating a new public sphere for people who believe, like you have just suggested earlier, who believe that Islam should be practiced in a more moderate way, looking for reconciliation, understanding, unity, that's right. Yeah. But others are doing exactly the opposite. So against network, we have to use a counter network, a network that would do exactly the kind of things that you were talking about.